The presenting sponsor of today's podcast is Fifth Element CBD. Fifth Element is ultra-high milligram CBD focused on relief and recovery after a workout. They are specially designed for people with an active lifestyle, from weekend warriors to professional athletes to bucket list gym enthusiasts. Fifth Element, aka 5E, is full-spectrum high-milligram hemp to help you whenever, wherever you need it, whether it's after the gym or after work. Get yours today to feel better tomorrow by visiting 5ehemp.com and use the promo code MONSTER for 50% off. Yes, you heard that right. 50% off. Half off. That's 5ehemp.com and use the code MONSTER. Go to 5ehemp and get 50% off. That's the number 5, the letter E, hemp.com.
You're listening to the Red Sea Podcast, part of the Over the Monster Network.
Red Sox fans have longed to hear it. The Boston Red Sox are world champions.
Hosted by Jake Devereaux.
It's gone. It's into the bullpen. This game is tied. This game is tied. David Ortiz. David Ortiz. David Ortiz.
And featuring Keaton DeRosier.
It's a grand slam. I'm telling you.
Welcome back to the Red Sea Podcast. This is your host, Jake Devereaux, and today I am joined for episode 204 by my regular co-host, Keaton DeRosier of Over the Monster and the Dynasty Guru. Keaton, welcome back to the show. It is finally spring training, and we are back in full swing. It is us every single freaking Monday recording to release on Tuesdays.
Excited to be back in the swing of things. We got baseball. We saw some dingers. It's nice. It's nice to just have the games back.
Yeah, it really is. And a little bit of housekeeping for everybody out there who's been supporting our podcast throughout this winter and last season as well. We are just going to have an absolutely killer lineup of shows for you this year. And that really starts to kind of get underway this week. If you listened last year, you know that Keaton and Shelley Verstrait did the pre-cap episode show where they would basically preview and recap Red Sox series as they end and begin. So that'll be coming to you twice a week. Usually that'll be out on Mondays. As well as on Thursdays, I believe, Keaton. Is that the other date that that'll drop?
Yes, Thursday.
Awesome. Also, Matt Collins is going to be back this year with his show. He's going to be podcasting with Brian Joyner. I think their show is going to be called Over the Monster. It'll all be on this same network, so you actually don't have to do anything, but they'll be giving you their takes on Red Sox stuff as well. As I said, Keaton and I will be joining you on our normal Tuesday. On Friday, we're going to have something really exciting this year. We're going to have Red Sox Fridays on the farm. It is going to be Shelley Verstrait and a new addition to the team, Bob Osgood, who works at the Dynasty Guru. And Shelley, obviously, been covering prospects for a number of outlets over the years. They're going to be talking about a different level of the Red Sox minor leagues every single week, and I'm going to be on that show from time to time as well, kind of helping navigate the prospect landscape. So we are going to have podcasts literally Monday through Friday for you to enjoy the Red Sox. So we do hope you will tune into all those, and you don't have to do anything. If you're already subscribed to this feed, everything will pop up there. So we're going to have tons and tons of great content for you this upcoming season. And if you want to go ahead and rate and review us on there and tell us you appreciate all the work that we're doing there for you guys. We would love that, and we are very happy to do it. So, that's it. We're excited. Okay, so we have a full show today. Spring training has begun. Red Sox have opened up with two losses, but who the hell cares? Baseball is back, Keaton. I'm just so excited for the spring. I'm wondering, before we get started here with some of our observations from games 1 and 2, do you have any sort of favorite things about spring training that you look for every year or anything that gets you excited?
Not necessarily with spring training, but I do love afternoon weekday games. So it was nice to have the Red Sox on while I was doing some work this afternoon. So I guess that's nice.
Yeah, that is really nice. For me, I always love the visuals of the weather. You know, the green grass at JetBlue Park and, you know, the clear blue skies in Florida. Just looking at that through my TV always makes me hella jealous when I look out and it's like white, cloudy, gross skies up in New England.
So that actually, one thing I do enjoy is the commentary banter, because it's like 90% filler. And yeah. Today, O'Brien and Remy were trying to guess how much Ronald Acuna's chains cost.
Mm.
That were, he had two big number 13s all diamond out, and they were trying to guess on how much they thought it cost during his at bat, which was wonderful.
What did they land on for a figure?
Remy said 50K and O'Brien said 100K.
Do you have a guess?
I have no fucking clue. I mean, they looked big.
Yeah, yeah.
So probably a lot. Far more than I will ever have to spend on necklaces.
Yeah, well, you know, I guess with the diamonds, right, it comes down to cut, color, and clarity. So
yeah,
we'll have to figure out what that is.
O'Brien was like, well, I mean, we've been around Ortiz and he had that big one too, so I feel like it's got to be at least 100K. It's just a wonderful spring training commentary.
That's the best. Baseball announcing is a true gem. All right, so let's get right into the observations here, Keaton. First of all, Nathan Eovaldi pumping 99 miles an hour in game one. Were you encouraged to see that? I mean, he didn't pitch amazingly well or anything, but getting the velocity back after, you know, dealing with injuries the last couple of years, that's pretty good.
Yeah, for sure. Especially his first start. Like, you think there'd be a bit more of a ramp up for that, but he was ready and raring to go. So yeah, I'm very encouraged by that.
Yeah, dude is just so jacked. Apparently Nathan Eovaldi is just a beast in the gym as well. So I guess we're not surprised. That's a guy I'm looking for big things from this year, because Nathan Eovaldi, it seems like as he's aged, has gotten to know his own repertoire better. Obviously, health is always the X factor with him, but nice to see that the velo and the things that make him an interesting pitcher are still kind of there for him. So we'll be looking for big things from Eovaldi this season.
Yeah.
Next thing that was pretty cool, and I'm sure this got you pretty jazzed up, Keaton. Three dingers, Bobby Dalbec, Michael Chavis, and Jeter Downs, each homered in the first game.
Yeah, Bobby Dalbec going the opposite way was real nice to see. Chavis, obviously, is just the sound of that homer was loud and just gave me shivers. And then also really nice to see Downs continuing. He had a pretty darn good spring last year in the time that he was given with the Red Sox, and it's nice to see him continuing that. I've been continually impressed by Jeter Downs.
Yeah, me too. Jeter Downs, it's always intriguing to see that pop that he has in games, especially as somebody who can play shortstop and in second base. So that's why we talk about him as a future 2020 threat. So it's nice to see that. Bobby Dalbec, obviously hitting tanks. That's what he does. He could be a huge part of the team. We had a couple listener questions, actually, that I want to get to kind of right now, because they tie into what we're talking about with these guys. The first one came from Taylor Case what's his podcast name? I forget.
Join the Ranks.
Join the Ranks. Yeah, that's it. It's a great podcast. I think I've actually been a guest on it before. So, yeah, I don't know why I'm thinking that. Yeah, I think I definitely have. but yeah, Taylor does a great job over there. He says over under on 27 dingers for Bobby Dalbec this year. Do you think he eclipses that?
Well, if you ask Bobby Bouncy Balls himself, he has his eyes set on 57.
Okay. So,
yeah, he's keeping his jersey that had the number 57 on it in his locker all year as a reminder to hit 57 homers. Seems aggressive.
Yeah. Yep.
But you know what? Given a full season, 27? That seems pretty reasonable. Yeah, I'll go for 30.
I think he will clear 27. I agree. I think it all comes down to playing time, right? You know, if he is getting the lion's share of the games at first base, I think he absolutely hits over 27 home runs. What's your figure? Put a number on it.
Realistically, I'll go 32.
Okay. I will go... 32 is a great number, Keaton, by the way. I will go even over your 32. I'm going to say he hits 36 and just has a massive season.
I love it.
Yeah, I don't know why I think that. It could come with a 240 batting average or lower. But, you know, if he hits 36 bombs, who cares, right?
If he's just pushing 40, then it doesn't matter what he's hitting.
Yeah. All right. I might have tied myself into being too aggressive this early in the podcast, but that's okay. The next guy, the surfing guy, actually, he says, isn't Chavis the king of spring training? What happens if he shoves in spring training and, say, Arroyo doesn't look that good? Does he win the third bench spot? So Michael Chavis does homer in that first game. Is there any way for you that he does beat out Arroyo?
Yeah, but I think it's more in Arroyo's hands. Bloom clearly loves him, and maybe he's on the outside in right now, but I feel like he's probably got the inside track to Chavis. I also actually went back because I was curious if he was the king of spring training. I don't believe that to be the case. He had a really good spring training in 2019, I guess. He hit 273, had four homers, but had six strikeouts in 11 games. 2020 was really bad. He had 14 strikeouts in 13 games and hit 200. Mm. So far this year, one strikeout, two games, and a homer. So it kind of, it was pretty inconsistent in spring training. Yeah. So if he does have a really good spring training, though, I don't think that they would want him to be in a bench role. I think they'd want him to continue to get at-bats. And I think that actually would probably play him into regular time at AAA to keep it going and earn a call-up again later.
Yeah, it's interesting. I'm not sure exactly what to think about Michael Chavis. So I think he's got a big-time uphill climb to get ahead of Arroyo, just because when you look at the way that the roster is constructed and the fact that they are planning on going with this three-man bench, Michael Chavis just doesn't fit that as cleanly as a guy like Arroyo, who can play not only second base like Chavis can, but he can play third base, something that Chavis isn't great at. And he can also play a little bit of shortstop, which is something that provides a little bit more flexibility. And I think that that is a bit more valuable than the fact that Chavis can just kind of switch between first and second primarily. Yeah. For me, Chavis would have to not only severely outplay Arroyo, but Chavis would have to actively demonstrate that he is a changed ball player by cranking on fastballs all spring training, like just having his way with them in a way that, you know, if all of his hits come off of low fastballs or breaking pitches, I don't care. Still sending you down, Michael.
Yeah, I agree. And particularly right now, with the team has no depth at shortstop and Bogaerts is hurt. So guys that might be able to slide over to short for a bit are going to be a lot more valuable. Chavis can't do that. If Bogaerts does have to miss time at the beginning of the regular season, I imagine Hernandez then would slide over to short and Arroyo would sit at second. But being able to maybe spell a few innings at short would be much more valuable. Hopefully, that is none of this happens and Bogaerts will be just fine by the time we get to opening day. Because this is just day two of spring training. But I would think that you're right. Chavis would have to cut down on the strikeouts and demonstrate that he can hit that high fastball, like, pretty decisively. Mm-hmm. Otherwise, yeah, he's probably starting AAA.
Yeah, I think so. Defense, though. Defense has been kind of annoying to watch through these first two games. In game one, Enrique Hernandez had an error. In game two, it was pretty ugly. Jeter Downs had two errors, a fielding error and a throwing error. Bobby Dalbec had an error, and Marwin Gonzalez had an error. Are you concerned about the sloppy play in the field? Because this was one of the really frustrating things about 2020 was all the freaking errors. They were just chucking the ball around the field. Are you worried at all?
So initially I was going to say yes to this because exactly what you just said, the errors were a massive issue for this team. However, it's spring training. So that's one of those things that I'm just not going to read into too much on day two. If they're still put up 2-3 errors a game 2 weeks from now, then yes, I'll be concerned. But right now I'm not.
Yeah, I'm not going to overreact right now. Kike Hernandez is one of those guys that traditionally has pretty good hands. Dalbec as well. I'm not super worried about him. Marwin, you know, hasn't been a butcher over the years either. Downs is the guy who I'm a little bit more concerned about in this regard, to be honest. I think that this is one of the things that has been somewhat of a criticism for him. When Downs has been assessed, it's been, you know, defense gets a little sloppy at times. I think the quote on him last year was he's going to be there when the lights go on, but some questioning the focus beforehand, I think. So Jeter Downs is going to have to learn how to really get himself ready for these games in a way that shows that he's a true professional, you know, that he's coming in and he's doing the drills that he needs to do. And there's that defensive lab. I don't know. Have you heard about this, Keaton? The lab that is set up to work on infield defense?
Yes, I did hear about it, and it sounded quite fascinating.
Yeah. So for the listeners that haven't really heard about this, the Red Sox have this sort of lab where they have this series of drills and they have some equipment there, and they're trying to work on infield defense by doing all these different drills. And it's a little bit more structured and a little bit different than maybe defense was approached in the past. And I'm not sure if this is a Bloom thing. It seems like it probably is. But, you know, that this is an area where guys like Devers are going to be working hard. Bogaerts mentioned that he was working there to try and, you know, fix any issues that he has. He's usually pretty sure-handed. The knock with him has been range. But it's somewhere that Jeter Downs has been working too. And I think that the quicker that Jeter can show that he can be a really good defender and a consistent defender, the quicker he can punch his ticket to the major leagues.
Yeah. Yeah, I would definitely agree with that. And I think the him having a really good spring training and really that it would also kind of help with the Red Sox depth at shortstop. I mean, just in general, they don't have real strong depth in case Bogaerts goes down, like even later in the year. But if that happens later in the year and Downs, you know, is making the steps that he needs to, we might see him up here earlier than we thought. So
yeah, I agree with you, Keaton. I was kind of thinking about that, and it's always been kind of my thought that maybe Duran or Casas could potentially beat Downs to Fenway. But really, when you look at it, Downs might have just as many opportunities as Duran has, and I think both of them have more opportunities to make it to the big leagues in terms of just pure team need than Tristan Casas does.
Yeah, I would agree with that.
So,
especially if Dalbec is, you know, pushing 40 homers, it's not going to be a big need to rush Casas there.
Yeah, I'm probably a lunatic for projecting that. But like some of these paths, obviously for Downs at shortstop or probably more likely second base at the big league level, because I think if Bogaerts was ever out for an extended period of time, they probably shift Hernandez over to shortstop and play Downs at second base. But that's an option if Arroyo gets hurt or really just performs horribly. You know, that's an option as well. If anybody gets hurt in the outfield and Hernandez has to go out there for any extended period of time, that's an option. I think it actually could come down to who they think is more ready, between Jaren Duran and Jeter Downs. So I want to ask you to kind of assess those two guys right now. Who do you think is more ready for that opportunity? Let's just say an injury does happen in the outfield. Who do you think they're more likely to call up to come up to the team?
I think it's Duran. And I think it probably has more to do with the outfield depth because, depending on kind of what they, I guess, wanted to do with where the injury happened. And it, basically, like, if there's an injury, it's probably Kike Hernandez taking over that spot, opening up second base. Or, if it happens in the outfield, then Duran. So I guess in your scenario where there's an outfield injury, probably makes more sense for Duran to come up.
Mm-hmm.
And then Hernandez stay at second. But then, like, if there's an injury in the infield somewhere else, you know, they have Chavis, they have Arroyo, they have other guys, that, and Marwin Gonzalez that could play second base instead. So I feel like they would get the shot to replace an injury before calling up Downs. But they don't really have much depth in the outfield. So if there is an injury in the outfield, then I would assume Duran's coming.
Yeah, I guess I kind of disagree. I would say that for me, I think that they're more likely to put Hernandez out in the outfield full time. I think the big thing is they want Duran to continue to work on his outfield defense because I think they see him ultimately as a center fielder because of his athleticism, but I don't think the routes are quite there to play center field. So I think I might lean towards throwing Hernandez in the outfield full time and bringing up Downs at a position that he's already comfortable at. But I could see your point too.
You know, I could see yours.
All right, two guys seeing each other's points. All right, let's move on to the next topic here. Your favorite player, maybe in the world, in game two, Garrett Richards got the nod to start the game and did not have a good start at the beginning. He was rescued from a bases loaded one-out situation by something called the mercy rule, which is new, and it allows the manager to end the inning after the pitcher has thrown 20 pitches in the inning, regardless of how many outs there are or runners on base. So they did this for Garrett Richards, who was struggling mightily. But then he came back in and had a really solid second inning. Keaton, I know you got a chance to watch Richards' second inning. What were some of your observations from that?
Yeah, I actually didn't realize how bad his first inning was, because by the time that I tuned in after a meeting, they were just starting the second inning, and he had a 1-2-3 inning, and I was like, oh, well, that looked pretty nice. And then I went and saw how he did in the first and was like, oh, Lord, that was bad.
Yeah.
But really encouraging to see him come back and have a 1-2-3 inning after that absolute disaster. So I think that's pretty encouraging. I mean, I'm not going to read too much into it, being the first spring training start for him. But I feel better about having him come back for another inning and going 1-2-3 than if he had come back and it had been a disaster again.
Yeah, how'd the stuff look to you, Keaton?
Looks fine. I mean, obviously, you know, I saw his better inning. So, you know, he missed bats. His control looked all right. I think he... no, because that was way up 1-3 inning. He didn't walk the next batter. Yeah, I mean, nothing really stuck out. I don't think his velocity was really wildly up or down or anything, but he had pretty decent command. Velocity looked good. Just looked like a solid spring training inning.
Yeah, and the thing, too, with spring training, you always have to be careful of with starters is, you know, they might not show their true repertoire coming out in spring training. A lot of times guys come out and they're trying to throw a certain number of fastballs or sliders or, you know, change-ups or whatever they're working on at that particular time. So you don't always get a true measure of what the pitcher is based on how they're performing in spring training. But I have to say, I think this mercy rule is a really good idea because you just don't want to mess with guys both physically and their heads in spring training. So I'm liking that Major League Baseball is kind of taking these measures to ease guys into the spring a little bit more. It's just, it's such a workshop environment. I think that it ought to be treated as much as such, you know?
Yeah, I think that's fine. I didn't realize that they were doing it. My first exposure to it was the Cubs-Cardinals game yesterday. Because the Red Sox game wasn't on MLB TV, so I couldn't watch it, but I needed some kind of baseball, so I flipped over to that one. And Jack Flaherty walked the bases loaded in the first inning, and then they all just walked off the mound. And I was like, is he hurt? Because that sucks. And then I saw later that it was like, no, they just invoked the mercy rule and ended the inning. And I was like, I do find it pretty hilarious that you can just walk the bases loaded, and then they can be like, all right, we're done. Just to get out of it. So I thought it was just really hilarious. I didn't realize that was a thing that they were doing all spring training. So I understand its function now, and I kind of get it.
I have to ask you, Keaton, if we were to invoke the mercy rule in some situation in life, okay? So something where you really want to be able to just pick up and leave when this situation is happening to you, where would you be most likely to invoke the mercy rule? Allows you to just grab your shit and go home.
I mean, initially I thought like at the grocery store, because I just don't like being around other people that have like no spatial awareness at all. But then I wouldn't get my groceries because it's not like, it's not a benefit to it. It's just picking up and going home. So, you know, I don't know. I got to give that one a little bit more thought.
Yeah, I figured. For me, my first thought was really frustrating traffic. You know, that did being come able to evoke the mercy rule there and just be transported to home. That would be pretty nice. I remember I lived in Washington, D.C. for 7 years, and sometimes I'd get stuck in traffic downtown in D.C., and I would literally lose my mind. So, yeah, that would be nice to have a mercy rule with that, for sure. Let's get to a couple other pitchers in Game 2 who looked quite good, one of which you saw, the other one you didn't get to see. Connor Siebold looked really freaking good. He's one of the pitchers that was acquired from the Phillies last year in the Heath Hembree Brandon Workman trade. In particular, his changeup was so filthy on the day, pitch that he's known for, that people were already making gifs of it online. So that is pretty good. Like to see that. He's one of the guys that could end up being quality starting pitcher depth for the Red Sox this year.
Yeah. Yeah, that is real encouraging to see. I'm kind of bummed. I started seeing on Twitter once he finished his inning that everybody was really impressed with it, and all said that his entire arsenal looked legit and really kind of ready to make an impact. And I was like, God damn it, I should have just I saw Thad Ward, who pitched right before him, so I turned it off right before he pitched. So I was kind of bummed. But it is real encouraging to see, because I mean, how many months have we been talking about that we know the biggest issue on this team is going to be the pitching, and they had no depth and they had no talent, and we were just like, what the hell is going on with this organization and their pitching? This is great, because they're going to need some help. There's going to be you know, times where he's going to be called upon to make some starts in a pinch, and you know, if he's ready to go with that, I mean, honestly, with a solid spring training, he may even pitch himself into that fifth spot. So it's not really, the guys ahead of him are not, don't really have a solid grasp on their spot in the rotation. So just want to see him keep it going.
Yeah, I think that would be pretty unlikely for him to grab that spot. But in the event of an injury, I mean, especially if Connor Siebold looks this good, you know, throughout the spring, I think that's certainly a possibility. Nice thing with him is that he has a true starter's arsenal, and he knows how to pitch. And it's also nice to see a guy who can throw a pitch like that, the changeup, and get guys to swing through it, or, you know, spit on it and it land for a strike. That's something that they just didn't have. They had so many of these Ryan Weber type guys last year that just needed to be absolutely pinpoint around the corners to have any sort of success. And it's nice to see more legitimate arms. I got to say, man, the last 2 years as a Red Sox fan have been crazy frustrating. So yeah. I'm just really looking forward to guys like Connor Siebold being the backup plan rather than whoever the hell else we watched last year.
Yep. 100%.
Talk to me about Thad Ward, though. I know you got to see him. He pitched a clean inning. What did he look like to you?
Yeah, that looks good. He looked like a guy that could step in a pinch in kind of whatever role they see fit for him. I think he's only started in the minors. So he's another guy that could look for some spot starts throughout the year, but I was pretty impressed. You know, didn't pop the radar gun, but he was another guy. At least the guys that I have picked up on while I've been watching don't seem like there's been much of a ramp up with stuff yet. To the pitchers, they seem like they've been pretty darn ready from the get-go. So he looks pretty good. Control looked pretty good. His clean inning, I think he didn't walk anybody, right?
I don't believe he did.
Oh, no, I'm thinking of, Kyle Hart, he walked too. That was the guy.
Yeah, he didn't walk anymore.
Yeah, and he got a strikeout. It was just a real, real solid inning. You know, it's by the time, he came up, there was no remnants of any people that I had ever heard of in Atlanta's lineup. So you can kind of take that for what it is. But it's spring training, though. There's quality hitters on the other side. So it was a solid inning to see him pitch.
Yeah, absolutely. I'm encouraged by him. That was a guy I mentioned last time we were on the pod together is somebody I'm going to be looking for because we didn't really get to see Thad Ward at the alternate site last year. And one of the better pitching prospects for the Red Sox and somebody who's a little bit further down on the starting pitcher depth chart, but somebody who's still relatively close and definitely one of the better homegrown arms in the system. So somebody I'm going to be looking for quite a bit as the minor leagues get underway this year.
Depth.
Absolutely. I'm digging the depth plan by Chaim Bloom. Impressive thing happened today as well. Nick York, who I believe is still 18 years old, which blows my mind, had a hit in a spring training game. This dude can just rake. The Red Sox might end up being like, I told you so, to me and everybody else who really criticized their draft plan here by taking York in the first round. They said time and time again when they took him, you know, this is a weird year. He would have had a higher draft slot, had people got a chance to see him, you know, yada, yada, yada. He wouldn't have been available in the third round. I believe them. I was still a little disappointed they didn't go for somebody big, but man, it seems like this kid has an extremely legitimate hit tool.
Yeah. Yeah, it sure does look that way. And I was right there with you with the criticism. I thought at that spot they could have gone a couple other different ways that I think would have helped out the team. But I didn't really know much about him. Not that, you know, folks outside of Major League Baseball did, because there just wasn't a lot there for the draft.
Yeah.
But that was the one thing that once he was drafted, I mean, all of the scouting reports, everything just said the dude can hit. And there was a lot of folks that thought he was the best high school bat in the draft. So it kind of made it feel a little bit better there. But yeah, I was actually kind of surprised to see that he even got an invite to spring training. And to see him get an at bat, get a hit, and draw a walk, pretty nice.
Yeah, it really is, and it's a continuation of what he was doing at the alternate site last year when he got a chance to come up there and, you know, actually held his own. It's just really encouraging to see. They could have something here with York, and hopefully the hit tool continues to stay kind of where it is, maybe progress a little bit, and if the power can come along, all of a sudden he becomes a very, very interesting player in this system. So Red Sox have done a phenomenal job with developing hitters, so hopefully they can get the most out of young Nick York here. Bullpen. Continuing with the trend for depth, in the first game, Edward Bizzardo, Seth Blair, and Steven Gonzalez all had clean innings in game one. Bizzardo is the guy whose stuff kind of popped last year, ended up getting protected. Seth Blair and Steven Gonzalez all pitched really well at the ATS, I believe it was, and also I believe they were at Instructs and pitched well there. It seems like all of these guys are continuing to throw well, and the nice thing is that these are all legitimate options for the bullpen in the event of injury or players being ineffective.
Yeah, I mean, the biggest thing, like you mentioned, it's just all about the depth, and to see that we're trending in the right direction with the depth in the starting pitching and in the bullpen makes me feel a hell of a lot better, because it has just been such a gaping hole for the past 2 years and made it just extremely hard to watch any Red Sox game. That I was happy to see Bizzardo had a nice clean inning, because I think we're going to see a lot of him this year, and I'm excited about it, even though his name is not Eduardo Bizzardo, but I'll get over it.
Eventually. I know you've brought that up a couple times. So.
I have. So every time I see it, I just can't. It bothers me so much.
Yeah, and Blair and Gonsalves have some prospect pedigree, too. So it's kind of nice to see those guys in a different role getting a chance to succeed as well. Both guys had previously started, and to see them thriving in a bullpen role with the Red Sox, you know, they're clearly taking shots on the right guys here. So it's nice to see some of those claims from year one working out.
Yeah, for sure.
The lineup is going to be one of the more interesting things to watch, and I think we're going to see a lot of different machinations of that lineup throughout the spring. Guys playing all over the place. I think that's going to be a hallmark. But they might play pretty different lineups depending on whether or not they're facing a lefty or righty. Do you have any sort of preferred lineup in terms of who you'd like to see in there versus lefties or righties?
The only thing is that, to me, Alex Verdugo has done enough to show me that he doesn't have tune issues, and he should play against whatever hand every day and be the leadoff hitter. Mm-hmm. Other than that, not really.
Yeah, you know, I think that they can mix and match, but I totally agree with you, man. Verdugo needs to play every day. Also, Enrique Hernandez really doesn't have any platoon splits when he's playing regularly. Marwin has zero platoon splits over the course of his career. Arroyo has some platoon splits, but he's kind of a bench guy. You know, I think the big thing will be with Cordero and maybe Renfro little bit with platooning, but I don't see it being drastically different versus handedness. I see it being more different based on who needs a day off, to be honest.
Yeah, I would agree with that. And I think particularly coming off of just a tiny season last year, it's basically just so much time off, then diving back into a full season this year. It'll probably be like, what was it 2019 or 2018, where like Bogarts had a day off, like the third game into the season.
Yeah.
And Cora really stuck with that rotation of when guys got days off throughout the year. It didn't really matter how early it was into the year or where it was like during the week next to off days or anything. It just kind of, he had his rotation and stuck to it. So I kind of imagine he'll stick to that as well. But I agree that I don't know if it'll be necessarily here's our left-handed lineup, here's our right-handed lineup. Guys are just going to get worked in and get their at-bats based on who needs an off day. And they have enough utility guys to make that work.
Yeah, I think so. Looking at this lineup, though, obviously the top four should be pretty damn good. We'll talk about that top spot just here in a second. But Verdugo, Bogarts, Devers, JD Martinez in some order. Christian Vasquez has probably hit well enough over the last couple of years to be in the fifth or sixth spot. But then the bottom of the lineup is what I find most interesting. So Hunter Renfro, Franchy Cordero, and Bobby Dalbec should make up some of those bottom spots. And Bobby Dalbec, if he does what we think he could do, might find himself rising up that lineup quite a bit, maybe to that fifth spot. I love the idea that Chaim Bloom has here by going with these big boom or bust, huge power guys at the bottom of the lineup. Because I was thinking about this, it's been difficult for the Red Sox bottom of the lineup to string together hits to create offense. So if you have these power boom or bust dudes at the bottom of your lineup, you don't really have to string together hits. You just need to get these guys to, you know, run into one. And especially if guys are getting on base ahead of them, all of a sudden that's a good way to create offense. I'm curious what your thoughts are with that. Do you prefer a lineup that can sort of string together hits at the bottom, or do you like this philosophy?
Well, I think it depends on what kind of lineup you have. The Red Sox don't have guys that can string together hits at the end of their lineup, and it was a lot easier to find these boom or bust guys at the positions of need than it would have been to put effort into getting guys that are more contact driven. And I think it gives a Red Sox offense that is not going to be hard pressed for runs, just that a little bit of an extra boost there. Because I don't know if having like four guys that are just going to try and string together hits to turn over the lineup makes a whole lot of sense when, that's basically, that would have been like Munoz and Arroyo. Mm-hmm. I mean, we saw that at the end of last year, and it really wasn't that exciting. It really didn't do much.
No.
So I don't think they needed to run that back. And I really like Hunter Renfro a lot. He had a great 2019, his last year in San Diego. So having him supplanted there at the end really gives the bottom of the lineup pitchers are going to have to think about it. I mean, they're not guys that are going to scare you, but if you make a mistake, they'll hit a homer. So yeah. there's a lot more difficult for pitchers to face that kind of lineup than facing, you know, Munoz and Arroyo all right in a row.
Yeah, that's a lot more for a pitcher to think about. I mean, the stakes become so much higher when he has to think about how he's pitching a particular guy. Because worst case scenario, with a guy like Munoz or Arroyo, it's like a double, you know, or it's a hard single or something like that. It's rare that they're going to beat you with power. I think it could end up benefiting the top of the lineup a little more than we think, too, because of how much they're thinking about those guys.
Yeah. And if, J.D. Martinez and Christian Vasquez are on base and then, like, Munoz or Arroyo comes up and hits a double, and maybe it's not that much damage, or hits a single or a double, you know, best case scenario, look for a double. But if Renfro comes up and hits a three-run home run, then that's a lot more damage.
Yeah.
So I like it. You know, it's not always going to be everything that we hope that it will be, but they'll walk into a more production than we've seen recently from the bottom of the order for the Red Sox. And I think that just adds a nice little flavor on top of the rest of the lineup that's not going to struggle to score runs.
Yeah, and we will see our fair share of frustrating inning-ending strikeouts from these guys, for sure.
Sure.
But yeah, I think the benefits will definitely outweigh that. One of the things I don't like very much, and I'm curious what you think about this, is that Cora has mentioned that he might use Enrique Hernandez to lead off games. I don't like that because in that lineup, it pushes Verdugo to the two spot and Bogaerts down to the fifth spot. I think Verdugo has earned the right to lead off for this team. I don't quite get what Cora's thinking here.
Neither do I. And not only is Verdugo just a better hitter, he's far better at just getting on base in general than Kike Hernandez. So, I mean, that's what you're looking for at the top. So, I also don't get that and don't like it. I would just like to see that be Verdugo's job and let him run with it.
Well, maybe Bloom can talk him out of that. It seems like something that doesn't make a whole lot of sense from a sabermetric standpoint. On the flip side, one of the things that I do love that Cora has said, is he said, quote unquote, "I like a structured bullpen," when asked about the closer situation. This is something I talked about last week, Keaton, being a huge proponent of naming a closer. I have strong feelings about this. It's likely to be Barnes or Ottavino, but my question to you is, kind of two parts. Who's it going to be, Barnes or Ottavino? And could Brazier factor into this?
I don't think Brazier. Well, actually, you know what? Maybe he can. Maybe. I'll put a maybe on that. I feel stronger about Ottavino because I think he's just a better reliever. However, he is only converted 2 of his last 10 save opportunities. Or, 12. 2 of his last 12 save opportunities in 2020 and 2019. Which is not a great conversion rate. Although Barnes led the American League in blown saves in 2020 and 2019, he did at least convert some. So he was at like a 50% rate, just a higher volume. So that actually has me a little bit worried that the recent success for Ottavino is really, really bad. But I still think he's overall a better reliever, so I'd like to see it go to Ottavino. But I'm also kind of surprised that Cora is that definitive about the roles, because that was the whole thing when he first came in and having a conversation with Craig Kimball, like, if I want to use you in the eighth, can I use you in the eighth? And he was like, no, I'm a closer guy in the ninth. I don't want that ish.
Yeah, I mean, I think that's a lesson he learned from 2019, though, because remember, it didn't work at all. And when Workman came through, I mean, that was different down the stretch when Work took that position over. The whole bullpen benefited.
Yeah. Yeah, I suppose you're right.
The Red Sox, though, as an organization, have led Major League Baseball in blown saves in 2019 and 2020. So I'm not super happy about that. I worry about the prospect of putting Barnes and Ottavino, either of those two guys, in the closer's role with the walk problems that they have. And I know Sawamura has walk problems too, and Cora already ruled out giving the job to Sawamura. So for me, Keaton, I almost want to see Brazier in that role, because I'm one of those people who thinks the closer role is important in that it is important to have defined roles as the closer, but I don't actually think that the closer role is important in terms of, you know, put your best pitcher there. So I kind of wouldn't mind seeing Brazier be the everyday closer and only throwing, you know, for 3 outs or whatever, and having Ottavino and Barnes be in there whenever in high leverage situations.
Well, see, that's I don't think it's that cut and dry, to be honest. Like, sure, Ottavino has his walk issues, but and the same with Barnes. I mean, I guess this is the biggest difference between the two. They both have really high strikeout rates to make up for their walks. However, Ottavino just does not give up fly balls or home runs.
Mm-hmm.
So he doesn't get hurt by his walks at all. And that was the same thing. Like, Kimbrel has always had walk rates at like 4, 4.5, but he would still get 40 saves a year because he would strike out like 16 per 9 and just wouldn't give up fly balls until the end, when like all he gave up was fly balls. But prior to that, he was good at taking the damage that he got and really limiting it. And I think Ottavino can do that. I do not think that Barnes can, because Barnes just cannot keep from giving up fly balls and homers. So I don't think it's as cut and dry as it's too many walks to be the closer. It's really kind of what is their overall skill set. And I feel better about Ottavino in that role than Barnes. But you're right. I mean, that's not just like with the bottom of the order. It's not always going to go great. And they're going to have some frustrating outings and where they walk 2 guys, give up a single, and all of a sudden we got a tie game. But I guess because of that, I really don't think that Brazier will be in the mix, because I think he's like 3rd in that pecking order. And I feel like Ottavino and Barnes would both have to really implode for him to be that next guy up to get a chance. But I mean, given, you know, Ottavino had a really, really bad 2020. So maybe that could happen.
Yeah, you've convinced me that Ottavino is a better candidate than Barnes, for sure. I think those are all great points, especially about him keeping the ball down and in the ballpark. Barnes scares the hell out of me, man. I don't want to see him in the closer spot, but I have a feeling Barnes is going to end up being the closer, if I had to pick a favorite.
I agree.
Yeah. Not sure I like that. I mean, I like the bullpen way better than I did last year. I still think we're going to have some frustrating ninth inning stuff. And I still think that, you know, come 2022, when this team is more ready to compete, hopefully, I think this is going to be an area the team needs to address. And whether that comes internally, whether that's Darwin's and Hernandez taking a step forward and claiming that role, or someone from outside the organization, it still feels to me like this situation wouldn't be good enough on a contending team.
No, I don't think that it would.
Mm-hmm. Okay, Keaton, that about wraps it up. I wanted to ask you before we get out of here, is there anything else you're going to be looking for as spring training games continue this upcoming week?
I mean, nothing more specific than I just want to watch as many Jaren Duran and bats as I can.
Mm-hmm.
However, I did have something. So our last podcast, we had a listener question that asked about our thoughts on who we thought would get the most innings pitched in the Red Sox rotation. You picked Garrett Richards. I picked Martin Perez, which seemed real safe.
Yep.
But I was curious what you, the listeners and readers, thought. And so I actually put that a little Twitter poll out with that exact question. And Eduardo Rodriguez got 46.5% to lead that poll. Martin Perez got 32.3%. Nate Evaldi got 15.6% and only 5.7% picked Garrett Richards. And to me, this seemed like leaning one of two ways for Rodriguez. Either people are really optimistic on his outlook coming off of a lost 2020 season, or there's still so little confidence in the starting pitching of the Red Sox that if Rodriguez can only go like 130, that still leads the team.
Man. I know Rodriguez himself is super optimistic about what his innings totals can be this year, and he's a free agent at the end of the year, so it, you know, behooves him to pitch a lot of innings. That is surprising to me. I'm surprised at the lack of faith in Garrett Richards. Maybe I've just, you've been impacting me too much with this Garrett Richards talk, man. I blame you.
I think that might be it.
Could be it. I'm drafting him on all my fantasy leagues. I got him on, I don't know, man. I'm too in on Garrett Richards. But that is really interesting. You know, I wrote about last week why they shouldn't extend Eduardo Rodriguez, because, you know, even outside of the myocarditis stuff, he's been a guy who's been really prone to blowups. But this is a huge year for him, man. I don't love Eddie. I'm rooting for him to have a good year because I think he's important to the team. But I also feel pretty strongly about this being the last year with the Red Sox. I don't know what your thoughts are on his future with the team. It might be too loaded of a question as we close this thing out. But, you know, if you could give us your short thoughts on Eddie, I'd be curious.
Yeah, I think I'm right there with you. I mean, he has only had one healthy season with the Red Sox. He's continued to improve and get better, which is nice to see, but that tells me that the Red Sox will not be looking to bring him back either long-term or for a lot of money. And someone else will probably give him both of those.
Yeah, I think you're right. All right, well, that does it for the podcast today. Again, go on, rate and review us, subscribe to our show. We do appreciate that. Follow us on Twitter. You can follow the Spoken Keats, or Keaton at the Spoken Keats. You can follow me at DevJake. You can follow the Over the Monster account at Over the Monster. And we do appreciate you, and we'll be with you again. Well, actually, somebody here will be with you again tomorrow. So stay with us. Goodbye.